All right, we got lots of stuff to get through. Some really interesting topics, I think. We were talking about recruiting, so we'll start there. Some interesting stories when it comes not only to college basketball, but football. We will start in the college basketball transfer portal. And there's many rankings, but I'm looking at the CBSSports.com ranking of the top 50 players in the college basketball transfer portal, as written by David Cobb, one of Nate's favorites. And we'll start with the player that Stan had mentioned that committed to K-State yesterday. He's ranked as the number 22 player in the transfer portal, Doug McDaniel. And you like it even more because he spells his Doug D-U-G. So that's the kind of Doug I like.
Like Dig Doug.
Right, he dug. He's out, he dug.
I think Dig Doug's with two G's,
right.
No?
He dug it, you know. So it's Doug McDaniel.
Nope, you're right, one G.
Wow. Well, you just like to correct
Mark
Jake, and then he was right.
Jake's right. I'm wrong.
So he's from Michigan now.
Love that game, though.
It's Kansas State. He averaged 16.3 points, 4.7 assists, shot almost 37% from three, and played for a bad Michigan team. 5'11 guard, was also rated as Michigan's top defender. Former four-star prospect. Will help a team immediately that needs to upgrade its guard play. So, Stan, tell us about the commitment of Doug McDaniel, transferring from Michigan to Kansas State.
Smaller guard, right, under 6 foot. But I think he meets a big criteria of what K-State wants, what Jerome Tang wants, and that is someone with experience. And you got to have a scoring capability. The fact that he averages 16-plus points a game in college basketball is a big number. You know, put this in perspective. Go back and look at Bill Self's, how many years has he been head coach at Kansas? 21 years, 22 years. Rarely has a Jayhawk average 20 points or above in a season for that kind of elite program. So think about 16 plus at a major college level at Michigan. So that's important. He's used to playing point guard. He's used to scoring the basketball. His three-point shooting percentage is in the range that you feel comfortable that he really can shoot the basketball. And that's going to be a big thing for K-State. Can you make the outside shot? K-State attempted more three-point shots this last season, the 23-24 season, than in any season in K-State history. But the percentage was not to the level that they wanted. So the percentage was not good. You just raise that percentage slightly, and you think about some close games that K-State was involved with and getting over the hump. They need to score better from the outside. So this looks like a very good signing. I don't know who all the candidates are out there, but it seems like it's very solid for K-State to get this guy.
It looks like it's exactly what they needed. Now, Kansas grabbed a commit this week that we haven't talked about because Nate refuses. So here I am again having to bring this up. And this was the guy that clearly they had circled, and this is the guy that Nate and Jake needed to root for because I've watched him plenty, and he's a stud, and he's from Lawrence. Zeke Mayo, who was at South Dakota State, Summit League Player of the Year after averaging almost 19 points, 5.5 rebounds, and 3.5 assists for South Dakota State, transfers from South Dakota State to Kansas, and everybody wanted him. And there's been a real good, strong track record of Summit League Players of the Year transferring up and performing at a high level. And so, Zeke Mayo, Nate Bucati.
Yeah. I think I saw quotes from him that said he wanted to be a Jayhawk all along. And, you know, it's one of the things about the transfer portal we talked about. It can be great for the big schools, but also it's tough for the smaller schools. You get a guy like this, you do a good job scouting, you help develop a kid, and then, you know, the bigger school that might have missed on him the first time around can just go, why don't you come on our place, you know? But that's the way it's going to work now. So I think it's a big pickup, you know, And
he graduated from Lawrence High in 2021.
Yeah.
So, and that's also it's we see a lot of that too with the transfer portal. For whatever reason, if the hometown school, the local school, didn't get you, there's an opportunity to come back, right? And that's you know,
there are plenty of positives about the transfer portal. People have transferred forever, by the way. Just used to have to right. sit out a year, mm-hmm. which made it less likely that people could put that investment in and do it. So obviously, it's free flowing and totally different than in the past. But there are so many good stories, and there are so many challenges. You just mentioned it. You know, South Dakota State invested a lot in a player, and suddenly they see him playing for Kansas. Is that good for South Dakota State, or is that their role in life? Yeah, in the coaching world, they've accepted that role. A good coach at South Dakota State can move up to the Big 12, and everyone accepts that. But players mm-hmm. doing it, little new to us. But for you, just think of the player.
Yeah.
He probably got a degree at South Dakota State. And it's time for him to move on and get a different view, maybe a master's program. And he gets to come back home, play at a higher level. He earned it, worked hard. Why wouldn't he get the chance? So it's so easy for those around college athletics to talk about the negativity of the NIL and transfer portal. Yeah, there are plenty of challenges. It's crazy. But there are plenty of positive stories as well.
Another former South Dakota State Summit League Player of the Year, Baylor Shireman, who's been a star at Creighton the past couple of years. So just giving the example.
Yeah. That you can, if you're going from that school to another big school, you can.
And the guy's a winner. I mean, really he won two conference championships mm-hmm. there, and he's played in the NCAA tournament. And
he has them, CBS Sports has him ranked as the number three player in the portal.
Yeah.
And then as.
KU desperately needs some people that can shoot.
Yes.
And he can shoot.
Is Hunter Dickinson coming back? The big-time recruit from last year?
I think so.
Did you say something?
I think so.
I saw Nate grabbing his
text
pocket
somebody.
For some NIL money out of his pocket.
Send a text for
NIL
money.
It
might be if Nate decides to give NIL money or not.
And for Mizzou fans, the kid that Mizzou got out of UT Martin, Jacob Cruz, he's ranked number 21. And, of course, the two guys that they are in on right now, Javon Porter, the youngest Porter, he's ranked number 7 out of Pepperdine. And the player that just spent the last weekend at Mizzou, Tony Perkins, who started 34 games for Iowa last year, averaged 14 points and 4.5 assists for them. And it was one of their best defensive players. He is considering Missouri, but nothing yet there. So,
how many conference wins for Missouri next year will make you satisfied? Like, that's progress.
500.
Are they playing 18 or 20 in the SEC next year? The Big 12 is
going
to 20
next year. I don't
conference
know.
Games, I believe.
I mean, if they can get, they got the kid from UT Martin, add another guard and a big, three, maybe four in the transfer portal, an impressive five-man recruiting class. You're talking about 8 or 9 new players.
So you expect
totally
to go from 0 to 9 or 10. Welcome to the transfer portal and
it's
the
wild.
Pressure on the coaches.
You don't
win
that,
right now.
Yeah,
you no
don't,
building.
You don't,
no building.
You don't get 2 or 3 years. But the crazy thing is, too, there's no AD. And so, like, who knows what the new AD is going to think of Dennis Gates and the process? Or
are you going to be the new AD? Have you put in your resume?
No, but I wish John Sunvold was. But I've been
is
saying
he candidate?
That for 20 years now. I mean, he's always a candidate in my heart.
Yeah.
He should
in my
be.
Life.
I believe the SEC will be playing 18.
Watch your mouth.
So there's a quote from Zeke Mayo that's got a bunch of Kansas fans saying, did he just announce that Hunter Dickinson is
What's
coming
the quote?
Back? From the Lawrence Journal World, he said, quote, "This team is very gritty. They're talented inside and out. I'm just excited to get to play alongside a fantastic point guard in DeJuan and also a center who can score from inside and out." Does that mean maybe they're going to get another center that can score from inside and out? I don't know, but that's what the KU fans are saying.
Fine.
You just announced that Dickinson's coming back, so that's the best I can give you
Steven,
right now.
Steven, did you hear that? Because you heard the same thing through the Chiefs grapevine.
Well.
That someone had signed already before they had signed. Maybe Nate knows the same thing.
I'm just reading.
I wrote my NIL check last night, and Hunter Dickinson is coming back.
Man, you don't have to leave for money. You can make money in college now. So.
Right.
Well,
Dickinson might be
could,
able to do better now.
Right.
Here, I don't know how much of an NBA prospect he really is. You know?
Right.
So
I'll switch to football real quick and just mention this before we move on. It was actually, and I just want to get bounce this off of you, Stan, because This is a little bit different. Mizzou landed a huge quarterback prospect yesterday in the 2025 class, a kid named Matt Zollers. And the final four, I guess, was Mizzou, Penn State, Georgia, and Pittsburgh. And he's ranked as the number three quarterback in the nation by On3 Consensus. He's a top five quarterback in the nation. And so it was just 6'4", 210, anyway, one of the top quarterbacks in the 2025 class. But what I thought was interesting was he's a Pennsylvania kid. And Mizzou, I literally can't remember the last, I'm not even talking quarterback, the last kid they got out of Pennsylvania. That's not a place where they recruit. And they went
by having Penn State in that list,
right,
that makes it more real,
right,
about the choice he made.
And Gabe DeArmond confirmed that the Penn State and the Georgia offers, they were committable offers. He could have gone there. So you out-recruit Georgia, which is fine. That's, you know, but you're not going to, I mean, Georgia's
the first time through.
Right. But, I mean, Penn State, being able to go up against Penn State and Georgia and taking a kid out of Pennsylvania, I don't know. What does that mean?
It means that their eyes are open across a wide range. Because a lot of times you have your recruiting areas, your hotbeds, certain places where you have relationships. Relationships matter. The assistant coaches knowing the high school coaches, the handlers, the quarterback gurus, whatever it is that you've got to find agents maybe now with NIL. Because you know certain areas, that's where you're going to have focus. And there's so many players everywhere. I mean, we can talk about Texas or Florida or California, but there are players everywhere. It's interesting that they even had the ability to seek out and find this quarterback in Pennsylvania. So it just means that Eli Drinkwitz and his staff is not just stuck in the areas that they are best at recruiting, that they're willing to take some people on nationally. And maybe, you know, we can't speak for Eli Drinkwitz, but he may say that's true of a quarterback. We recruit nationally for a quarterback because you go find your guy, and we treat that position different than others. We'll see if that leads to any other recruits coming in. Will Howard is from Pennsylvania, yeah, and came to K-State. But you know why he might have done that?
Why is that?
Oh, you'll like this story.
Mm-hmm.
His favorite player for a while was
Carson Wentz,
who went to North Dakota State,
right,
and played under Chris Klieman.
And now he's
back. Became a Philadelphia Eagle. Remember when he was the dominant quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles? I mean, remember the year they won a Super Bowl?
Under he was an MVP candidate.
Coach Peterson? He blew out his knee running into the end zone, and Nick Foles got the statue for Philly, right?
Right.
But the real quarterback who drove them through 12 games, what was it, 12 or 13 starts, and was a dominant quarterback was Carson Wentz. And so when Chris Klieman was able to call Will Howard and his family in Pennsylvania, they're like, I'm listening. You're the kind of coach I want to hear from. And sure enough, Carson Wentz now a Chief. Will Howard came to K-State. His little brother signed with K-State, a big, bad dude, offensive lineman type of guy. He came, so if you wonder how Will Howard's association and feelings about K-State are, you know that his family, his brother, is a new recruit coming into K-State right now, and then the world spins. Ohio State's going to have their spring game on national TV, I believe. I think that's coming up maybe next weekend. I don't know the exact date, but Ohio State's going to have their spring game, and it'll be so interesting to me because Will Howard will be one of the quarterbacks out there, a guy I know so well,
awesome,
seen him play. But is that a big circle right there from Pennsylvania and Mizzou all the way around to Carson Wentz and to Ohio State?
So that's, well, you know what? That'll lead us in. We'll play some Carson Wentz right here. But first, let's see if Nate Bucati can guess this. Who was one of the recruiters from Penn State that was after this elite quarterback, Matt Zollers, who ends up going to Mizzou?
You know this answer.
Oh, yeah, the Andy Kotelnicki.
Yep.
Oh, boom,
yes.
You got it.
There you go.
Yeah. Did I help you by saying you knew
it?
Well,
is
the fact that, you guys tipped me off that it would be somebody that I should know. And I was like, why would I know any assistant coaches?
Right.
Oh, well, that's one.
But bottom line, this is it was a huge get for, you know, maybe Eli Drinkwitz is the AD. And everyone else is just going to fall in line.
Maybe he didn't like Andy, and because he's a KU guy, he goes, I'm going to go to Mizzou.
So you mentioned Carson Wentz. And a couple of weeks ago when we were running down all the lists of available free agents and we looked at the quarterbacks, it was either bring back Blaine Gabbert or I said sign Carson Wentz. They flirted with Carson Wentz last year and Carson Wentz decided to decline. But I like this signing a lot as a backup quarterback, and I think you know he's familiar, at least familiar with the idea of the offense after having played with Doug Peterson. And so I think he's going to fit in very well. Let's play a couple of clips from Carson Wentz, and Stan, we'll get your thoughts on this new addition. And look, is it a headliner? No, it's not. But guess what? If something happens with Patrick Mahomes, twists an ankle, we've seen him get hurt in playoff games, all of a sudden Carson Wentz becomes really, really important. And I think that that's exactly the kind of guy that Andy, I mean, would you guys say he's a more talented quarterback than any backup that they've had since what? I mean, Henny, Blaine Gabbert, Moore. I mean, those are all the. But I mean, Carson Wentz, and this is a. I don't know. You can make that argument.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think any of the other guys were ever an MVP candidate in the middle of.
And
the season.
I know he won a lot of games too. So here's Carson Wentz when he was asked what he wants to get out of this season if it's only one and done with the Chiefs.
Lots of unknowns about the future. You know, it's all take it one day at a time, first and foremost. But, you know, big intrigue to wanting to come here. And, you know, why I'm here today is just the winning culture and seeing it from afar, seeing it around the league for the last couple of years and just the culture that Coach Reed has kind of set. And you see it and have admired it for years. And so that was a big piece of the puzzle for me and the desire to be here on a winning team in a good culture, in a good community with a good fan base. Just seemed like a good fit.
Carson Wentz was asked if he talked to Nick Foles about the Chiefs before he signed with Kansas City.
Yeah, I actually never did in this process, but, I mean, when I played with Nick, I remember all the good things he had to say about his time here. He absolutely loved it. He loved working with those guys and those things he said to me back then definitely still rang true in my head kind of as I was kind of making this decision, so to speak. So I just remember all the positive things he said about the organization, coaches, those names you just mentioned. So, yeah, those things were definitely a factor and kind of gave me a little more peace and comfort in knowing what I was getting into type of thing.
Wentz was asked if the years he spent with Doug Peterson will help him now that he's playing for Andy Reid in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the X's and O's yet. I see him from afar watching film or watching games, you know, whenever I'd see the Chiefs on film and those types of things. But I would imagine it'll kind of make sense to me pretty quick because of that. You know, being 5 years with Coach Peterson and that offense is, you know, obviously there's always little intricacies and little differences, but I think a lot of it will make sense to me and kind of resonate with me pretty quickly. And that part I'm looking forward to. You know, the last couple of years, offenses have been very different than I've been in. And so I've got to see a lot, experience a lot. So I think this one will kind of hit home, so to speak, and be the most familiar for me over the last couple of years.
My friend Todd just pointed out to me that the best backup the Chiefs have had under Andy Reid was Patrick Mahomes. So, yes, that you're correct. But the other guys, yeah. What I was referencing.
Yeah. Why is Todd Lebo?
Oh, no, different time.
Okay.
Lebo would never speak to me in that tone.
Okay.
Sometimes Lebo doesn't speak to me at all. One more. Carson Wentz was asked by Todd Lebo, Mr. Red Ass himself, what he's learned about himself over the past several seasons.
Yeah, it's a great question. And without a doubt, those are all things. And you learn quickly to just take things one day at a time and try and be grateful, you know, and make the most of whatever opportunity God puts in front of you. And you know, I've learned that I have an amazing wife, an amazing family, and amazing support staff within my own friendship and family group. And so, you know, life doesn't always go the way we always plan, and things don't always work out. But, you know, God is good, and God's the one writing the story. And so for me, my faith has grown. My character has grown. And just, you know, whatever the situation I'm in, whether I'm the one out there playing, whether I'm on the sideline, you know, wearing a hat, whatever it is. Last year I was at home a lot more. You know, I was waiting for a call, so I was being a dad a lot more. So whatever door God opens, just trying to faithfully walk through it, and my faith has really grown and strengthened because of that, because of the different circumstances that have come up, and I'm grateful for them.
I think it's a good signing. This is probably the best backup that Mahomes has had in Kansas City, and we've seen guys step in and play very well as backup quarterbacks when they needed to under Andy Reid. Stan, what do you think of a Carson Wentz, backup quarterback for the Chiefs?
I think one of the most valuable things that a backup quarterback has to do in Kansas City is make the room a positive experience for Patrick Mahomes. You can talk about what happens if Patrick Mahomes missed some games or something like that. Yeah, okay, let's talk about the skill level. But the most important thing and the most likely thing is Patrick Mahomes is going to be there quarterbacking. And the relationship he has in the quarterback room with the quarterback coach, and especially his backup quarterback, is a key item. Sometimes it's helpful during the game. A reminder that they talked about on Wednesday might be something that gets mentioned in the third quarter. A great backup quarterback is there to make Patrick Mahomes flourish. He wants feedback. They need to know when to give the feedback. Be supportive. Don't talk about competing with him. And it all started with Alex Smith teaching Patrick Mahomes. And Patrick Mahomes, I think, is the kind of guy who creates an environment that's likely that no matter who the backup is, it's going to turn out well. But a guy like Carson Wentz is very helpful. He's been a starter. He's been a big-time draft choice. He knows about all that pressure, but he's gone through a lot. A little like Alex Smith. Alex Smith got put in the washer and just spun around and then thrown in the dryer and spun. Remember his whole career?
Yeah.
Just crazy. He's a super athlete who went undefeated at Utah, was a first pick, great human being, super smart, athletic. He could do it all. And yet he was an average NFL quarterback, and the disrespect around that was incredible. And what do? You look internally. You find out your true worth. You find God, maybe. You trust in your family and your support system, but you understand that your job may be different than being this superstar living up to everyone's expectations. Well, Carson Wentz has been through that now, too. He has not. Try to list all the places he's been. Hardly anybody could do it right now. He's gone from place to place to sitting at home. Guess what? He's not there to live up to hype of being one of the top picks in the NFL draft. He's there to find a place where he can win, be supportive of what's going on, be ready to play if he's needed, be ready to wear a hat, and be an extension of Andy Reid. There's a lot going on in the game. It seems like, for us, the 3 hours, it takes a while. For that coaching staff and those players, it is like a snap of the fingers. Andy Reid's got a lot going on, including calling plays. Guess what? His best assistant coach might not be Matt Nagy. It might be a quarterback who's a veteran who stands over there and understands what he heard during the week from Andy, what Patrick wants, and then the game unfolds and a safety's sneaking up into this area and no one's noticing it. You know, he mentions, hey, coach, during a timeout, you know, while the music's blaring at Arrowhead and you wonder what's going on. He's the kind of guy who can walk over and go, hey, what about this? He has credibility. He knows what you need to do to win out there, and he's ready to support winning. This guy's going to love being here. Mm-hmm. He knows now what losing.
Mm-hmm.
Most organizations in the NFL are messes, okay?
Yep.
They are. And it's not always their fault as human beings, because you know what's called salary cap. You can't keep people. You can love someone and want to keep them and say, stick with this man. We're going to be great together. And then you go, oh, we got to let you go because you're worth too much money. Bye-bye. Jadarius. You know, Jarius Sneed, those kind of things. Here's a guy who now says, oh, my gosh, going in every day to a winning organization, hearing what Andy Reid has to say, and guess what? He has no agenda other than to be ready to win. He may be an NFL starting quarterback 3 years from now because of this experience. He may find another gear like Alex Smith did and go out and be a better quarterback when most people think he's kind of washed up and done. But his mentality's perfect. It's a good fit. Now, I'm not going to brag about this and say, on a 1 to 100, you know, this is a 95, and another example is only a 70. There are many guys who could come in and be the backup for the Kansas City Chiefs, because you know what Andy Reid does with those guys? Makes them way better than they are. So the Chiefs could stick with their backup from last year, Mr. Mizzou, and I would feel very comfortable. So I'm not going to brag about, oh, this is the greatest signing ever, but I do think Carson Wentz will fit in very, very well. Be very appreciative of being a Kansas City Chiefs player and be ready to roll if he has to play.
You know, and this is an ancient history. This is interesting to me. It was March of 2021, right? He was traded from the Eagles to the Colts for a third round pick and a first round pick. A 2021 third round pick and a 2022 first round pick. That was March 17, 2021, right? And so he goes to the Colts, plays for Frank Reich, reunited with Frank Reich. He threw for 3,500 yards, 27 touchdowns, and 7 interceptions.
And they lost their last couple of games, or they would have been a playoff team.
Right.
And they fell on hard times right at the end.
So they moved on from him. And then, almost exactly a year later, in March of 2022, they trade him to Washington in exchange. So they, it was Wentz, the Colts' second and seventh round picks, in exchange for second and third round picks in 22 and a conditional third round pick in 23. So, I mean, teams were getting a lot for him in 21 and 22, and then things don't go well in Washington. He ends up backing up Stafford last year, and now here he is with Kansas City. So he's not that far removed. Yeah, you could absolutely see him being rebuilt to the point where he could go and start someplace else. So I totally agree with you, and I think this is a great fit for what he needs in his career. And for what the Chiefs need, just in case of break glass in case of emergency.
It's really great for his career, yeah. I think. And he's going to appreciate that. But if Blaine Gabbert was a backup quarterback for the Chiefs right now, I would feel just as good about the season next year. Because this is Patrick Mahomes' deal, right? And Gabbert played over his capability, just like almost everybody does when they're around Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. These guys are... I mean, Patrick Mahomes, the tone he sets in a winning culture, in what he does, and the way he opens his mind up to say things that no quarterback coach ever taught before. Like, Patrick, why did you throw the ball on the backside when that's the fifth option? And who knows? He might have said, I don't know. I just felt like he was open. And suddenly they design a play after that and go, wait a second. We never thought about this being a feature component of this look that we're going to make him pay over here. And a guy like Carson Wentz will have that imprinted in his brain forever. The way Andy Reid teaches these guys and gives them confidence is off the charts. I thought Blaine Gabbert looked good last year coming in. So I think for the Chiefs, this is good. But for Carson Wentz, it's great.
Nate wants to know about quarterback sneaks. And so Jesse Newell, regular guest on the Border Patrol, asked Carson Wentz about that possibility that he could come in here and be the quarterback sneak guy. So let's hear Jesse asking Carson Wentz about that yesterday, Jake.
Brett Veach, the GM for the Chiefs, has kind of made mention in the offseason about getting a backup who potentially could run a quarterback sneak with the specific scenarios the Chiefs have. I know you've had success with that. Is that something you're prepared to do? Is that something they've talked to you about?
That is news to me. No idea. I mean, yes, I've had lots of success with that. I would credit a lot of my success to Jason Kelsey over the years there in Philly. He was the real secret ingredient to that one. But no, I mean, I have no idea what, you know, whatever capacity, you know, they need me to help in any way, that's why I'm here. So looking forward to it.
I'll take it. I'll take some quarterback sneaks.
It's a little it's a little more challenging than you think. These guys take a lot of shotgun snaps. It's one thing when you playing down after down with a center, because when you get in a quarterback sneak situation, it is so compact. Everyone knows it's coming. And if I would have described it this way, you know, 100 years ago and go, you're going to walk up with a bunch of big old dudes butt to butt and stick your hands underneath them in their groin and get the foot, you know, it's like, nah, this ain't going to work very well. So I'm just telling you, when you're sitting on the sideline, they go in there and take a snap in that situation. It's not as easy as if you're the quarterback down after down.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Nate, I know you've been looking forward to this segment of the show. Stan, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Royals owner John Sherman's wife took to Facebook to offer her commentary about
your reaction is exactly what
vote.
My
right.
Stan, just the look on your face, right?
And look, all I can tell you is this. I'm looking at KCTV5.
I've met her. She seemed like a nice lady.
Oh, I'm sure
her.
She is.
It's in the big news.
I'm looking at Channel 9.
Not just sports
all
news.
These news, they're reporting it. I went to her Facebook page. Everything looked on the up and up. I screenshotted all of the comments that are still there in case they get deleted. So I got them, and I'm going to read them, and I'm very anxious to get...
I have not heard these.
Good. Well, I don't want you... Don't show them. I'm going to read them, and I want to get your... I just want to get your reactions, because... Hey, she had... That's the stuff to get off her chest.
Maybe she said she's looking forward to watching Nate on television this weekend.
Perhaps, I don't know.
This is 2024.
Right.
Facebook. This is a real sentence.
What's wrong with it? We will be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My tour of high schools will continue today as I will be headed to Kearney High School for a track meet. Let's go. Weather looks like it's going to be pretty good, too. All right, here we go. So I'm looking at this story, KCTV5. Royals owner John Sherman's wife, Marnie, shared her thoughts on Tuesday night's election results via several comments on Facebook. So now let me go to the comments from straight from her Facebook page. And she was interacting with people that were commenting on her page. And here, she tells someone named Alex, "Unfortunately, neither team will work with Jackson County again. They had been working behind the scenes for 2 years, attempting to get a location approved. Which is why I think Frank, Frank White's plan all along. In any case, most unfortunate for sports fans in KC, the lack of leadership has lost the city two treasured assets. I mean, if you don't support the Chiefs after 3 Super Bowl wins, why would they stay? We will be lucky if both teams wind up in Kansas. At least still in the area." And then another post from Marnie Sherman. "Well, I can't discuss all the details, but it wasn't a switch except to the public. The county wouldn't move on anything, and the crossroads was the most desirable because of several factors all along. The 13th Street site also involved moving the homes of a 50-unit apartment complex and several other negatives." So then someone named Donald chimed in and said, "Really well said. I haven't spent time yet determining why this measure was defeated, but I have a suspicion that folks in non-KC Jackson County think Raytown, Independence, Blue Springs, Sugar Creek might have been a key. Can't wait till they have to drive to Western Wyandotte County for a ball game in a few short years. Let's call this a setback. JS doesn't give up, John Sherman." Marnie's response? "Hope that's the worst of it. No more Jackson County for sure." And then she posted, "Some are having buyer's remorse on their no vote." So the headlines there is you got John Sherman's wife saying, "No more Jackson County for sure. This was it wasn't a switch except to the public. Unfortunately, neither team will work with Jackson County again. Lack of leadership. This was Frank White's plan all along." That's Stan. That's a lot for her to say on Facebook, isn't it?
Well, it's very interesting. I don't know if there's ever been a situation that you know of someone whose spouse spoke and it didn't represent the other spouse's position. So I think you need to understand that's what she's saying. Doesn't mean that's what John's saying, but it might be exactly it. He may have written it. I don't know. The whole thing is complicated, but I don't. Every person's vote and reasons are different, but at the end of the day, I think things are going to work out fine and maybe better. How about us? You guys mostly all said, at the end of the day, I'd be a yes vote because we're in sports. Yeah, we love sports.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we want the simplest, direct way of saying the Royals are going to be here for another 40 years and the Chiefs are going to be here for a long time? Why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't you want people to invest money into those teams if you love sports like we do, and hey, we even are broadcasters, so we're even more closely tied to it. So it's pretty simple, right? But that's not as simple for everyone else. But at the end of the day, you may find more money than you ever imagined invested in sports. There's a 3/8 sales tax that's in place right now if you go to Kansas City, Missouri, or into Jackson County and you buy something at a restaurant today. You're paying 3/8 cent sales tax, and that money is going to the Chiefs and Royals. Very simple, right? We're voting, the people who lived in Jackson County were voting, do you want to get taxed a new tax that is the same as the old tax and continue that on? So let's just start right there. If one of the two teams leaves, don't you believe that Jackson County's response to the other team after getting punched in the gut by not having one team in town votes for the 3/8 sales tax again, and it goes to only one team? And then wherever the county or city that the other team went to in the metropolitan area, they pay them a bunch of money? Guys, we maybe see more money invested in sports than you've ever seen before. If the Royals go to Clay County, which is one of the options, right, Stephen? Wasn't it down to two options, and according to the Royals, and Clay County was one of them? What happens if they go back over there to North Kansas City and take a bunch of money?
They get that red carpet rolled out for them.
And take a bunch of money from that county. Don't you think the 3/8 sales tax will be voted for in Jackson County, all for the Chiefs? And there's a lot of exciting things that can happen. This thing had problems for a lot of reasons. Let me say this. Downtown, if you believe that a downtown has to be strong for a community to be strong, then you're in on this. But if you just work downtown and are part of the downtown like I am, then this was a giant win to see the Royals wanting to come downtown. Obviously. But what's crazy is, as you know, many and maybe most of the people that say, gosh, I hope the Royals go downtown. I hope this 3/8 sales tax vote goes the way of a yes vote and they get to come downtown. This will be great. But most of those people who are saying that didn't vote because they don't live in Missouri. We live in Kansas. A lot of us live in Kansas, and we really are rooting for the downtown. That is the easy thing. The businesses downtown, the downtown area would have won if the Royals do go down there. But there are plenty of other people who have no desire to go downtown to go to a ball game. And the people who live out near the current Truman Sports Complex say, why would I want to leave here and go downtown? Now, let me skip ahead real quick. What are the positives that can happen? We know that John Sherman wants to be downtown as first choice, but if he said that wasn't true, that would open his mind up. We know Clark Hunt says there's value in his dad Lamar's love of Arrowhead Stadium and the tradition of Arrowhead Stadium. We know that's something, but he could erase that in 5 seconds and go, I'm going to build a giant retractable dome somewhere in this metropolitan area, and we'll get Super Bowls. We'll get NCAA Final Fours. The Royals could build a stadium with a good architectural design that actually had a retractable roof, and it could be a dome for an NCAA Final Four, even though it's a smaller site. So there's a lot of cool things that could happen. What happens if the Royals would have said, we want to build a brand new, shiny stadium, and it would have been right next door to where Kauffman is now? Would the vote been different? There are a number of people saying, we want to go out to this location and not be downtown. We're great if you get a new stadium, but it doesn't have to be downtown. And the Crossroads people who live there and have an artsy feel and have developed that area, and there's a wedding. If you guys ever go to weddings, that is the area where you go all the time for wedding receptions and weddings. If you put this baseball stadium over them, they don't like it. They voted no and got ground roots voting negativity. They're going, you're smashing into our world. So this thing isn't done. And, oh, by the way, when she says never Jackson County, how many times have you seen people be at each other's throats, Stephen, and then hugging each other, you know, later and yeah. going, oh, this really worked out. So
every day on this show.
Yeah. Jackson, I'm not going to guess which relationship
right.
you're talking about there. So, no, it's wide open. There's a lot of things can happen. You can go back to Jackson County, but they got to get their ducks in a row and do a much better job. But more than likely, what we're going to end up with is those two teams separated and in different taxing environments with more money being invested in those two teams than ever would have come in through this vote.
I know she doesn't speak for John Sherman and she doesn't speak for the organization, but do you think he was really excited that she posted all that? Do you think he liked that? Oh, good. Posted all that on Facebook?
Well, maybe he's a guy. Right. Remember when Jimmy Johnson, the famous coach of the Dallas Cowboys, used the media to talk to his players? maybe his wife's Facebook is a way to talk to the media. And it
I can't say all this,
mouth.
But you can.
It's okay for you to slide us out, because I'll just say, that wasn't me. She's a...
Just load up your Facebook comments, and here's what I want you to say. So,
what did Jake's Facebook comments say after that?
I don't have a Facebook.
Okay. He has a burner Facebook.
I don't have a Facebook.
Right. Okay, let's bring back into this on WHV. We have about 5 minutes left. One big story, hot topic that we did not ask you about, Stan. Rashee Rice and what happened down in Dallas. Jake, you want to play a... For some reason, Jake enjoys playing clips from his from Rashee Rice's attorney. So Jake's like our legal insider. And so let's hear Royce West tell us that. Which one do you want to play, Jake?
We can play them both.
Just play them both real quick. Okay, here's Royce West talking about his client, Rashee Rice.
I want to say on behalf of Mr. Rice that he has fully cooperated with the Dallas Police Department. Every question that was asked of him, he responded to the Dallas Police Department. And we will continue to cooperate with them in terms of this particular accident. What happens next is, number one, we continue to work with the Dallas Police Department, answering questions that they have. Secondly, we work with the victims to make certain that we deal with their issues, be it bodily injury or property damage. We work with them on that.
So there is... Royce West, speaking of talking about Rashee Rice, and he did say that Rashee Rice was driving the Lamborghini. So,
during the interview, Mr. Rice acknowledged that he was driving the Lamborghini. That was the question that was asked, and he responded to that he was driving the Lamborghini.
Stan,
well, that's a big piece of information to be clarified, because his comment before was he would take full responsibility for his part in the accident, right? But that didn't mean he was the driver. We didn't know. So this clarifies it. It seems like they've been very upfront about the situation. Obviously, it all comes down to just absolutely lucky that people didn't get hurt worse. Doesn't mean they didn't get traumatized more than, you know, we talk about mental health a lot more. How about the 4-year-old who was in a vehicle that was involved in a wreck? You know, so there's a lot more to it. But fortunately, awful bodily injury and especially death was not part of the accident. And that just is what? Luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a big part of our evaluation as human beings and our legal system is about results. So if someone would have died, we would think differently of it, I believe. And legally, he would be in more trouble. The issues of choices made by young people, wealthy people, stars, you know, that's so complicated. I'm not going to go there. I think from a point of view of the Kansas City Chiefs and football, back to on the field, not in personal lives, I think this will end up being a very big positive for the Chiefs. Because sometimes a little bit of humble pie is the greatest thing you need when you're a young, rising star. And I think he will fall in line and be a better Kansas City Chief. It may put a little scar on his marketability. Maybe he'll get a contract that you don't have to pay him quite as much when you give him a contract in a couple years because of things like, hey, you're a risk. Talk to his agent, say, you know, a little bit of risk. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think this will straighten him out and he'll be a better football player for the Chiefs. If he gets suspended in the NFL, it won't matter. It'll just mean he's more rested for the run to the Super Bowl. So from a football perspective, it's just a complete non-factor for me. He'll be playing for the Kansas City Chiefs sometime, and I think he'll be more dedicated to doing the right thing than he was before.
Stan, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Have a great weekend. That's Stan Weber. We'll be right back after this. Mike McFarland on Sports Radio 810 WHP.